How's it going, coaches? My name's Jared Medlin. Welcome to the Coach Podcast. And today, I'm rocking it solo. My partner in crime, Jake Hancock, is on vacay. So all you got is me. And really, today, I'm going to show you a talk from one of our special guests that we had at Coach Night in May of this year, 2021. His name is Kurt Johnston. Kurt is a youth ministry legend. He is at Saddleback Church, and he's been a mentor and a coach for our youth ministry for years and years. And he shared with us at Coach Night. Some of you were there and you heard Kurt, and some of you haven't gotten the opportunity to hear from Kurt. And I thought his message was so good that we should place it right here on the podcast so that you guys could get a chance to listen. I will warn you, this one is going to be longer than normal. It will be a commitment, but I do think it's worth it. So whoever you are out there listening right now, I just want to ask you, do you need some inspiration for doing what you're doing in youth ministry? Do you need to remember why you coach at CCV? Do you need a challenge to grow as a coach? If those are needs that hit you where you're at in life right now, I'm just telling you right now, you need to listen to this entire message from Kurt, because I think it's gonna hit in a really powerful way. Before I get the ball rolling and push the play button for Kurt's message, I just want to remind you something we're doing right now as we're trying to change and evolve the format of the podcast. We would like to hear from you. So what questions would you like Jake and I to talk about to help you grow as a coach? If you don't mind, shoot us an email. I'll put this in the notes because it's a stupid long email address, but it is ccvstudentsleadership@ccv.church. Shoot us a message. Ask us your questions. Jake and I would love to answer them in the coming months. All right, I'm going to get out of the way, and I hope you'll enjoy and really take something away from our friend and mentor, Kurt Johnston.
Well, hello, everybody. Man, it is so great to be here. The worship, I know there was just three songs, but worship was amazing. It's so, yeah, you guys, I mean, Jordan Howerton and your whole meet. Now, here's how I know worship was amazing is because towards the end, see, I'm a Baptist. I'm a Southern Baptist. And so my worship posture is usually this. And tonight, I noticed towards the end, my hands had gotten like here. And my legs were kind of doing this. I mean, it's like, wait, what's going on? I'm glad they stopped when they did, or I would have been like swinging off of the chandeliers. It would have gotten crazy up in here if it would have had more worship. When I look at this crowd tonight, what comes to my mind is, I am not in California anymore because, like, this is highly illegal in California. Highly illegal. My wife and I was hanging out towards the back because I thought any minute now the authorities are going to come busting in here and I am going to be out that door heading for the desert. This is crazy. It's awesome. It's like all the good kind of crazy. It's just us California people, I'm kind of like, Dustin, is this allowed? Are we in trouble? Is a man going to get us? What's going on? But it's really, really fun. My wife and I have not been in this kind of environment for a year and 4 months. We've not been, and if you think about that, we've not been in this kind of environment since March of 2020. So this is really, really kind of really fun and actually kind of emotional for me tonight. So thanks for letting me be here. I'm thrilled to share with you guys for just a little bit tonight. My wife and I have some friends. They live in California now. They just moved out about a year ago, but they used to live in Chicago. And a few years ago, we went to visit them in Chicago and they said, hey, we've got something awesome planned for tonight or for today. What we're gonna do is we're gonna go to downtown Chicago and we're gonna rent Segways. Do you guys know what Segways are? If you don't know what Segways are, they're these things right there, right? Now, they've been around a long time, like 15 years ago, if you were listening to the news, they were saying, oh man, by the year 2020, whatever, Segways are gonna be everywhere. Segways will be the primary mode of transportation, and they never quite took off, and so apparently all these excess Segways are now in the hands of tourist organizations, and you can go into major cities and you can go on Segway tours. And they said, hey, we're going to go to downtown Chicago, and we're going to rent Segways, and we're going to take a Segway tour. It's like a two-hour Segway tour all over downtown Chicago. And we're like, sweet, this is unbelievable. Here's a picture of us like halfway through our tour. Nothing says tourists like lime green helmets. You're like, hey, no, we belong here. Seriously, Segways are all the way. So that's us about halfway through. Now, before we were allowed to go on the tour, they gave us all these tips and rules about what's going to happen, and we had a tour guide, and we were actually four of like 15 or 16 people on the Segway tour. And the big rule was stay in a single file line, and whatever you do, don't get ahead of the tour guide. I'll go in front of you, I'll set the pace, I'll tell you when it's safe to cross the streets and all this kind of stuff. And now, has anybody ever ridden a Segway? Anybody? A few of you. Yeah, they're pretty cool, right? I mean, they're the most intuitive thing. When you're on the Segway, it's all heel toe. That's about how much you move. You just go on your toes, and the whole thing just vroom, goes forward. Go back on your heels, and the whole thing just slows down. You look. If you ride a motorcycle, you know they say kind of like look, don't steer, just kind of look where you're going. It's kind of that way with a Segway. You just kind of look over there, and you go over there. It's amazing. Very, very fun. And we, towards the end of the tour, you know, after being on them for 2 hours, you're getting pretty comfortable. And towards the end of the tour, they actually took us up this long hill and around Soldier Field, which is where the Chicago Bears play, around Soldier Field. Sorry to hear that. And around Soldier Field. And then we start to go down this long, straight path that's probably, I don't know, 200 yards down. And we're in a single file line, and somewhere along the way, we had all sort of gotten separated, the four of us, and we, you know, it was me and then three people, and then my wife and three. And I didn't know where Scott is, my buddy, and his wife. I didn't know for sure where they were. And we're just cruising down the hill, and all of a sudden, out of the corner of my ear, if there's such a thing, the background, I hear this, little help. I'm cruising. Gets a little bit louder. Little help. I'm thinking, huh? Somebody needs a little help. Little help. Little help. Little help. And I look over to my left, and my buddy Scott had gotten out of formation, and he is going down the hill, and he's got one foot on the Segway and one behind it like an anchor, and he's dragging, and what he doesn't realize, he's dragging this way, he's leaning forward. So leaning forward on a Segway is like pedal to the metal, and he's, little help, and as he's zipping by, he's looking at each person, little help, little help, little help, little help, and he just goes zipping by me, and I'm just like... And he goes, and he is just dragging, and somehow he's comes to a stop about this close to the back of our tour guide. And the tour guide somehow never even knew it happened. He just comes to a stop, right? Tour guide's right there. He just looks back. Now here's a question for you. Have you ever felt like in your coaching career, maybe you're a 10-year veteran, maybe this is year one, but have you ever felt like in your coaching career that it seems like everybody else has it all figured out? They're in formation, they're all headed the same direction, they've got it under control, and you're maybe off to the side, things are a little bit loose, right? A little bit out of control, you're a little bit uncertain, you're losing confidence, and you're kind of saying, a little help. Anybody? A little help? A little help? Well, tonight, my hope is that for all of you, that you walk out of here just feeling like, hey, tonight maybe you just got a little help, right? I mean, I'm not a youth ministry professor. I'm not a youth ministry expert. I'm a fellow youth ministry Segway rider with you. And we're kind of on this tour together. And maybe I've been riding the Segway just a little bit longer than some of you. Apparently, a whole lot longer than most of you, based on how many of you raised your hands that I've been doing this for long. That old saying, I was doing this since before you were born, I never really understood how powerful that was until I saw most of the hands go up. I thought, oh gosh, that's cool, and I'm getting kind of old. But tonight, I'm just going to share from one Segway rider to another. Is that okay? It's just, this is, there's no research in any of this stuff that I'm going to share with you. It's just, it's mostly anecdotal. It's stuff that Kurt has learned as I've been doing youth ministry over the years. And if you're taking notes, here's what I'm going to promise you. I promise you that more times than not, me and the slides will be out of sync, okay? So it's okay if you go, hey, you're 15 slides behind, or Kurt, what are you talking about? It's okay, just yell at me and we'll get back on track. But I love this Bible verse in, there you go, in Ecclesiastes 10:10, it says this, if the axe is dull and its edge unsharpened, more strength is needed, but skill will bring success. If the axe is dull and its edge unsharpened, more strength is needed, but skill will bring success. And so tonight, I just want to share with you 10, and we'll move fast through some, and we'll kind of camp out on others. I just want to share with you what I would say, these are 10 skills that will help you, oops, look at that. See, I already jumped around. 10 skills will help you in this next ministry season. Here's skill number one. Skill number one, focus on long-term fruit, not short-term failure. A skill that you need to have in this season of youth ministry is to focus on long-term fruit and not short-term failure. Years ago, when I was a young, inexperienced junior high pastor, it was my very first church. It was probably in like the first 3 months of ministry. So I was brand new, and it was summertime, and I decided, you know what? I need to take a couple of our eighth grade boys surfing for the day. And so I asked Joe and Chad, hey, you guys want to go surfing on Saturday? I'll pick you up. And Joe had something going on in the morning, so we couldn't really go until we had to get a late start. And I said, but I'll get you home in time for dinner or by dark. And they said, okay. And so I picked up Chad and Joe. And to make a really long story short, everything that could go wrong that day went wrong. I drove this old junky car and it got a flat tire on the freeway in a terrible part of town. And so we changed tires. And then I went about another 5 miles and the spare tire blew out. So we had to walk and we had to take one rim with us to go get a new tire put on it. We handed the rim over the fence from the freeway and walked through this terrible part of town. And then we got lost and it went on and on. I mean, one fiasco after another. In fact, it was so bad that when we finally got to the beach, I did the math and I realized in order to get Chad and Joe home on time, we don't have time to surf. So I said, you guys, here's the deal. Let's just put our board shorts on and we'll just go body surf for like 10 or 15 minutes and we'll call it a day. And so that's what we did. We didn't even unstrap the surfboards. We just ran and jumped in the water and swam around for 15 minutes, and I drove him home and got him home in time. And I remember that night laying in bed. I remember this like it was yesterday. Laying in bed going, how can I be a youth pastor when I can't even pull off an activity for 2 eighth grade boys? Like, how in the world am I going to make this work? Fast forward 10 years. 10 years later, one of our old students is now 23 years old or so, getting married, and I had seen Joe here and there, I had not seen Chad since junior high. And we all show up at the wedding, and after the wedding, we're talking, and Chad brings up the beach surf fiasco. Hey, Kurt, remember that time when like me and Joe were in eighth grade and you picked us up and your car got a flat tire and then you got another flat tire and then you said the F word? And he didn't say that because I didn't say that. I just had to throw that in to make sure you're tracking with me. But you were all frustrated, and remember then we got to the beach and you wouldn't even let us take off. And he's recounting like every painful moment from 10 years. I'm like, yeah, Chad, yes, 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 yes. And he says this, Kurt, our junior high group was awesome. And this massive smile. Our junior high group was awesome. And I'm thinking, wow. I could not get in the way of what God was doing in the life of Chad. Like, I couldn't get in the way of that. And sometimes, if you're like me, you have a tendency to focus on the short-term failures and you lose sight of the long-term fruit of your ministry. You're going to have some bad small group experiences in the next 12 months, I promise you. I promise you, you're going to have some tough junior high nights, or you guys all meet on evenings, right? Junior high on Saturday nights and high school on Sunday nights. Is that how you guys meet? You're going to have some tough Saturday nights. You're going to have some tough Sunday nights. I promise you, you will. You're going to have nights where you go home going, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if it matters. I don't know if it's making a difference. Don't focus on the short term. You're not as bad a leader as your worst small group night. Don't measure your success by the worst small group. That's what we have a tendency to do. But think about the long-term fruit, because there are students, and lots of them, who 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 years from now are gonna look back at even some of your worst moments and say, man, I'm so glad I was a part of that small group. I'm so glad you're my coach. So a skill that you need to develop is to focus on long-term fruit, not short-term failure. Another skill is strive for engagement more than attendance. Now, here's the thing. Your church is a big church, and you're a big church because attendance and growth and evangelism is a big, big thing. I toured last night with Leo Galarza. He took me on your Peoria campus, and we walked around the sports fields. I'm walking around the sports fields going, my goodness, this is unbelievable. And this is all for evangelism, and this is all to reach more people and to help the kingdom and your church grow? Yeah. That's awesome. You as a coach, the church growth, now I'm gonna say something that I don't know if this will get me in trouble with Dustin or not, but I'm gonna say it anyway. The church growth isn't your problem. It's not your problem. It's the pastors, people like Dustin and your campus pastors and your youth pastors, they're the ones who are responsible to think through, how do we grow this thing? How do we reach more people? Your job is to be faithful with the kids that show up in your small group. Your job is to be there for the kids who show up in your small group. And instead of worrying about attendance, I would encourage you to develop the skill of just thinking about engagement. Like, how engaged are the kids in my group when they show up? How engaged am I in their life outside of the church? And what, you know, if they don't come to church one Sunday night, but you engaged with them once or twice during the week or during the month, that's still a win. You see, every single study shows that families are coming to church less and less every month. That the average family in America, Christian, Jesus-loving family, month to month, they go to church less today than they did 5 years ago. In our church, the best guess we have is that most people, consistent, Jesus-loving tithers, members of the church, come about 1.5 times a month. 1.5 times a month, which means my core students are not in youth group as much or more than they are in youth group. And if all I'm focusing on is attendance, that can be really discouraging. But just because they're not showing up doesn't mean I can't engage with them and I can't look for ways to connect and keep them involved even when they can't be in the seats. Does that make sense? And so you guys need to let the people who are professionals at church growth and all that kind of stuff, let them worry about that, attendance. You just worry about being faithful and engaging with your students whenever you have the opportunity to. And you have opportunity more than ever. One of the beautiful things of all of our technology and social media and all the different ways that we can engage with students that didn't exist back in the day, right? I mean, back in the day, it kind of was, if they're not at church, about the only thing I can do is call them on the phone. Because back then, teenagers, if you called them on the phone, they might answer the phone and talk to you on the phone, right? Instead of like, my teenager's like, Dad, why do you call me? Just text. My wife is like, Kurt, quit calling me. Just text me. I'm going, well, it's because it's called a telephone. That's what we talk in. I don't understand. My wife's younger than me. I don't understand your generation. So look for ways to engage and focus on that more than attendance. Another skill is when you fail, fail forward. When you fail, fail forward. Believe it or not, despite my stature in high school, I was a high school running back. Which tells you one of two things. I'll let you decide. Either Kurt's an amazing amazingly deceptive athlete, or Kurt's high school football team must have been horrific if Kurt was the running back. I'll let you decide which one of those is true. But I was a high school running back, and my freshman year, my coach pulled me aside and said something that stuck in me all through my 4 high school football years. And he said, "Johnston, when you get tackled, always fall forward. Always get positive yards. Whatever you do, get positive yardage. If the play breaks down and you're getting stuck in the backfield, fall forward. Always fall forward." And in youth ministry, when you fall, when you fail, a skill that you need to have is to fail forward. Failures happen. Bad nights happen. You say things you regret. A plan that you planned didn't go over so well. Things go wrong, right? Parents get frustrated. You forgot to send out the reminder email, or you changed the time that you needed students picked up from this event at the last minute, and some parents didn't get the email. All that stuff, right? You fail. We all fail. When you fail, fail forward. And here's a few little tips on how to fall forward. One is you identify what caused you to fall, right? Okay, what went wrong? So when you go home, like for me, that night after I got back from surfing, that event was a failure. It was. Now, long term, Chad and Joe, God had this long-term trajectory, right? But in the short term, I have to recognize, okay, that was a failure. What I could have done is I could have said, okay, what caused me to fail? What went wrong? Then you learn from it, and you hold on to the positives. The best way to fall forward is to hold on to the positive. Every time you fail, there is some positives in that. There were positives in my surfing day with Chad and Joe. We laughed. We cried. We went on a nice long walk down the freeway together, right? I mean, there was some positive. They learned how to change 2 tires, right? I mean, if I think about it, I can come up with all kinds of positives, and that helps me get positive yardage even though the play broke down. And so when you have a bad experience as a youth leader, as a coach, when you fail, when you fall, I would encourage you to develop the skill of falling forward. Another skill is to embrace the squiggle. Excuse me. Some of you guys I heard you chuckle on this because I've shared this before. But what I've learned over the years is that oftentimes coaches and youth leaders get frustrated in their role. Working with teenagers can be frustrating. We can admit that, right? Working with teenagers can be a frustrating journey at times. Not all the time, but what I have learned is that oftentimes one of the reasons we get frustrated is because we have a misunderstanding of what a teenager's spiritual journey should look like. Right? We kind of come into it with a misunderstanding of what their spiritual journey, especially with us in their lives, should look like. And oftentimes we think that their spiritual journey should look like this. That somewhere, maybe at camp, maybe on a Saturday night, maybe on a Sunday night, but some point, oh, thank you, that a teenager will come into, they'll give their life to Jesus, and if they're serious enough about their journey with Jesus, and if we're good enough coaches, then their journey will look like this. Every day, they'll just get a little bit closer to Jesus. Right? Every day they're just growing every day closer to the cross, just doing my thing, and I'm so thankful for my coach and so thankful for CCV and the youth group, and I'm reading the Bible on my own, and I'm just getting closer and closer to Jesus. Well, if you've worked with teenagers for a week, you know that their journey oftentimes, you know, the spiritual journey looks sort of more like that, right? That's the picture that we've all been taught. That there's good days and bad days, highs and lows, peaks and valleys. It's sort of like the stock market, right? Like there's Black Monday, but you don't get out because you're in it for the long haul. It's Our spiritual journey is a long-term investment. And if you just hang in there through the good and the bad, the highs and the lows, over time, sure, you'll be able to identify low moments, but over time, you're going to be closer to Jesus. That's the picture that we've all been taught. That's the picture that makes sense. I would suggest that a teenager's spiritual journey looks more like that. That's the picture. Now, I'm going to give you a litmus test tonight. If you're looking at this and you're going, not on my watch, I'm going to straighten this generation out for Jesus. If that makes you frustrated, if it makes you angry, if it makes you want to give up, oh yeah, that's right, that is the picture. This culture is ruining our kids. Youth ministry may not be the place for you. It really may not. It may not. You can go do parking ministry or what, you know, there's so many other very important ministries. Just a side note, I say parking ministry because one of our best ever junior high volunteers, we used to do things like this, but we would invite their spouses to it. Because my theory was, man, if we can expose spouses to how awesome youth ministry is, maybe they'll want to join too, right? And so this guy Butch showed up one night, and his wife Michelle was one of our junior high leaders, and I'm like, and Butch was laughing the whole time and playing the games like you guys. He's just having a time. I'm like, okay, Butch has some skills. Like, Butch could be a great youth leader. So afterwards, I'm like, hey, Butch, I'm Kurt. Man, I love having Michelle. Oh, yeah, she loves being involved. It's awesome. How come you're not doing youth ministry? I'm already in a ministry. You are? What do you do? And he goes, oh, yeah, I do the Levi ministry. And we had this, it was like volunteer janitors, basically. Volunteer, he would come in and clean up and stack the chairs. Yeah, he goes, I show up after events and I stack the chairs. I said, awesome. And I said, and this is like the stupidest question ever, but I just said, Butch, are chairs going to hell if they don't know Jesus? That's what I said to him. Like, Butch, are chairs going to hell if they don't know Jesus? And as soon as I said, like, oh gosh, why did I sound stupid? And Butch goes, I never thought of it like that. I mean, now that you put it that way, no. I mean, that one chair, because I could never get it stacked. There's probably one, that chair over there with a crooked leg, it's going to hell. But he's like, no. And Butch joined our junior high team and was a junior high volunteer for like 10 years. Where was I? Oh, the squiggle, okay. I don't even know how I got off on Butch. What are we talking about? What were we talking? I don't know. Anyway, Butch, great volunteer. Oh, litmus test, the litmus test. Thank you. Now, what I hope is that you look at this and you go, okay, I'm up for that. I can do that. You see, here's the thing. Junior highers, high schoolers, their life is way messier than highs and lows, peaks and valleys. It's one step forward, three steps back, two steps sideways, around the corner, good again, bad again. It's a mess. Which, if you read about the Apostle Paul's life and what he writes, the Kurt version, where Paul says, I don't understand myself. I know what is right, but I can't do it. Squiggle. I know what I shouldn't do, but I do it anyway. Squiggle. If you look at most of the people in Scripture, their life was a mess. And so if you want to develop a really important skill this year, I would develop the skill of embracing the squiggle. Hug it out with a squiggle. Just love the squiggle. I love that squiggle, and let me tell you why. Because if this is what God expects from me as a youth pastor, I'm not the man for the job. I'm not the man for the job. I'm not smart enough. I'm not spiritual enough. I don't have my own walk figured out enough. If that's what God wants, I'm out. I can't do it. When I look at that and I think, okay, God, if that's what you're giving me to deal with, how can I screw that up? Right? I mean, how can I mess that up? You're giving me a teenager that's a hot mess to start with.
Like, I can't make it any worse.
I'm in. I'm your man.
And maybe that's the point. Maybe the point of youth ministry, just maybe, isn't for us to straighten out their path. Maybe the point, maybe our role is to journey with them on the messy path that they find themselves on. You see, what's the same in all three of those pictures is the cross is still where we're headed. We're still headed to get closer to Jesus. We still have the same goal in mind. But to be a great coach, you embrace the fact that the journey for a teenager is messy and squiggly and ugly and rough and beautiful. It's beautiful when they're walking that path with an adult who cares about them and loves Jesus Christ. Another skill is to pay extra attention to the hidden curriculum. I'm not sure exactly how your youth ministry nights work, but my basic understanding is that there's large group teaching time and then small group discussion time, and like happens oftentimes. And it's tempting for us to slip into the mindset, especially as coaches, to go, okay, during the 30 minutes of teaching time each week, that's when I gotta really be prepared. And I need Central to give us really good curriculum so that we can have awesome small group discussions. My friend, Segway friend, little help friend, Scott, he came up, I don't know if he came up with it, but it's the first time I heard this term of the hidden curriculum. And by that, what I mean is that everything happening in your small group, everything happening from the moment a teenager walks through your youth room door until you say, see you next week, everything is teaching something. And oftentimes the hidden curriculum is way more powerful than the actual curriculum. At the very least, the hidden curriculum is setting the stage for their hearts to be open or closed to the message you're trying to deliver during teaching time. Does that make sense? So let me give you examples. When I say everything teaches something, these would be some examples. Visitors treated in a warm way, the lesson is God cares about lost people. Adults interacting with students, the lesson is they actually like us. Students involved in ministry, the lesson there is God has gifted me. Teenager-friendly music, the lesson there is, well, you know, at least they're trying. Grace shown to a troublemaker, the lesson is they'll forgive me. Youth worker caught kissing spouse, the lesson is, I didn't know old people still did that. Consistency, the lesson is, I can trust them. And organized and prepared, the lesson taught there is, we're important to them. So the hidden curriculum, what the things around your formal teaching time, how those things are happening, is the hidden curriculum, and oftentimes, that's teaching more than the actual lesson itself. Does that make sense? And so pay attention to the hidden curriculum and take the hidden curriculum as seriously as you do the actual formal teaching time. Remember, next skill is remember if you aren't winning with parents, you're losing. If you aren't winning with parents, you're losing. If I were to say, like in the history of youth ministry, if I were to write a youth ministry book about parents' involvement or youth ministry's relationship with parents, it would have these chapters. Chapter one would be, and this is probably from like the 80s to the early 90s, so when I started in youth ministry up until like maybe the early 90s, I think that the chapter would be, parents are a hassle, we're the pros. When I first got into youth ministry, it was really like, hey parents, you're messing your kids up. Drop them off with us, and we'll undo all the stupid stuff you've done. Because we're awesome. We're the youth pastors. We're cool. We can play basketball and ride skateboards. And in an hour or two a week, we can do it all because we are amazing. And that was kind of get out of our hair. I can't say that anymore. Get out of my hair. I can't say it. I wish I could. But and we'll do the rest. And then chapter two, kind of in the late 90s to the late 2010s, This phrase, very popular phrase, and it's still an okay phrase, I would say the chapter would be partnering with parents, part one. Partnering with parents. But what partnering with parents really meant was, hey parents, sometimes you have things we need, so we'd like to partner with you to use your cabin in the mountains. We would like to partner with you to borrow your Suburban for our ski trip. We would like to partner with you because you have an awesome backyard with a massive hot tub that our whole small group can fit in. So we love parents. We love partnering with parents. And it was sort of like this one-directional transactional relationship with parents. That still exists to some extent. I think chapter 3 and where we find ourselves in now, and it's amazing, would be partnering with parents part 2. We're in this together. We're in this thing together. In our student ministry, we this picture we use is of a three-legged stool, and we talk about we have three audiences that we minister to. We minister to our students, we minister to our coaches, and we minister to the parents. And all three of those are equally important. And what we've learned over the years, and this is more important the younger you get. So with seventh graders, it's probably more important than with 11th graders. But if you're not winning with mom and dad, you're actually losing. One of my favorite Bible verses is, if parents are for you, who can be against you? Right? That's it. I think that's in the message, I think in there somewhere. But but there's truth in that. I mean, if parents are for you, who can be against you? You want parents on your side. You want to partner with them. You want to help them win. We have a saying in our ministry. We teach our coaches all the time. We say, never put a wedge in the relationship between a parent and a child. Never put the wedge in there. In fact, we talk about these three things that we say, you know, you can't do everything for parents. You can't do everything for parents. That's not your job. You're a volunteer coach. Your primary focus is the students. But here's what you can do is you can provide a little hope, a little harmony, and a little help. Hope, help, and harmony. Hope is you just say to a parent, hey, hang in there. Hang in there. You're going to be okay. Your teenager's not the only one who rolls their eyes at you. I know it feels like that. Just you're going to make it. 9 parents out of 10 live through the experience, right? I mean, you just say, you're going to be okay. Help is, hey, here's a book to read. Here's an article that you might like. Here's some references we have for you. You don't have to be an expert, but you can just provide a little bit of help. And then harmony is when you do whatever you can to keep as much harmony in the home as you can, which goes back to we don't put wedges in between. So when a teenager says, my mom and dad are so strict. And you roll your eyes, yeah, they are. Your parents are crazy strict. You're not creating harmony. You're putting a wedge in that relationship, right? Even when you have eighth graders, seventh graders, maybe even high schoolers, and you say, hey, you tell the kids, hey, we're all gonna go see this movie. And it's a PG-13 movie, right? Maybe in that moment you're creating disharmony because maybe there's a family in your group where they've decided we don't see those movies. Yeah, but our small group's going to go see them. So try to partner with parents and work with them and not work against them. You can't do everything, but you can give parents a little bit of hope, help, and harmony. Another skill to develop is simply this: be interested, not interesting. This goes against what we think is the case for good youth ministry. We have somehow bought into the lie that to be a great youth worker, to be a great coach, we have to be super interesting, right? Like, we've got to be the show. And that's why you've got guys my age that work with teenagers wearing skinny jeans, and they're going to the skate park and trying to be like, hey, youths, look at you guys. And like, what in the world? Like, what? And we try to keep up with all the language. And I was out with dinner with Leo Galars last night. He's like, Kurt, have you seen this? I'm gonna mess it up. I guess this is a new thing. Like, what is it? Ye? What? Woo! What is it? Yeah, I have no idea. I have no idea. He did that to me and like, what, you wanna fight? Come on, buddy. He's like, wee! I'm like, what are you doing? Okay, now, you guys, I'm 55 years old. I'm 55. Can you imagine if for a second, next week or whenever I'm teaching, it won't be next week because it's California, but someday in the future, when I'm teaching our students, and I'm like, hey, wee. could you imagine? You're laughing, and you're grown-ups. Right? I don't need to be interesting. I don't need to be interesting. The way to a student's heart is not to be an interesting adult. It's to be an interested adult. You don't need to be interesting. You need to be interested in them. Wayne Rice is a youth ministry guru. He founded, co-founded years ago, a youth ministry organization called Youth Specialties. And they, for years and years, maybe still are like the leading voice in youth ministry. They do conferences, they publish books. And he says this, teenagers will be drawn to, this is good news for people like me, the oldest person in the room who takes them seriously. Teenagers will be drawn to the oldest person in the room who takes them seriously, who's interested in them. You don't need to be interesting. You don't need to be cool. You need to give a rip about the lives of teenagers. You need to make them the focus of the ministry, of your time with them. Here's a few tips on how to be interested. Ask lots of questions. Remember their answer and follow up later, right? So if you ask a teenager one week, hey, how'd your week go? And they say, well, you know, I'm pretty nervous because I have a test tomorrow and I haven't really studied. And if I don't get a good grade, it's going to mess up, you know, being in AP English next year. Good for you. You're interested, right? You ask a question. You ask an open-ended question. When you follow up the next week, hey, last week you mentioned how nervous you were about the test. How'd that go? How'd that work out for you? Because I've been thinking about you ever since then, right? Now you're really, really interested. Ask lots of questions. Remember their answer. Follow up later. This one's hard for us because we know so much more than teenagers, right? I mean, we've got life kind of figured out. We've been, whatever they're saying to you, you've heard it 100 times. You've lived it yourself. But listen more than you speak. Be a good listener and be a slow advice giver. Have big ears, a tiny mouth, whatever image helps you with that. Make eye contact. Put away your phone. Just look for ways to be interested and worry less about being interesting. Another tip, another skill is to set multiple bars and practice the art of the nudge. Set multiple bars and practice the art of the nudge. Years ago, I asked a friend who was a youth pastor at a big church, kind of like yours. I said, hey, like, what's your goal each year for your student ministry? And this was his answer. My goal each year is for every teenager to take their next step. That's my goal, is for every teenager to take their next step. And I remember thinking, oh, what a low bar. Like, really, that's your goal, is to take one step every teenager? That's a low bar. But the longer I've been in it, the more I realize how genius that is. You see, we have a tendency to sort of treat our whole youth group as one monolithic group. And youth groups are great at this. Youth groups all over the country are great at, like, putting a banner up. It's their theme for the year. Each one, reach one. We're all going to reach one friend for Jesus. Or this year it's missions and we're all going to go on a missions trip or whatever it might. This year it's, our year is the Word of God. That's a good theme, but you know, the Word of God. And we're all going to read the Bible 20 minutes a day, and they make these grand goals for the whole group. But when you think about setting lots of bars and practicing the art of the nudge, here's a picture I want you to have. You see, when you set one goal for your whole group, your whole life group, hey guys, this year, here's my goal for our group this year, is that we would all pray for 15 minutes a day. Here's my goal for us as a group this year, is that we would all invite one friend to church at some point this year. That's great. The problem with that is that bar is way too low for some of your students, right? That's a low bar for some of them. And for others in your same small group, that bar's way too high. Like, they're not ready to reach that bar yet. They're still kind of wrestling through being a Jesus follower themselves. And for you to say, we're each going to invite a friend for church, they're going, whoa. Man, I'm not ready for that. So you set lots of bars and you nudge each student towards the appropriate bar for them. Now, the work that that takes is now you've got to get to know your students as individuals, right? You've kind of got to know where Brian is in his journey and where Brianna is in her journey so that you can say, hey, Brian, this year, man, this would be a great year for you to go on our international missions trip because you know that that's the next bar for Brian. And you go to Brianna and you say, hey, Brianna, you know, I notice that every time your mom picks you up from church and she says it's time to go, you roll your eyes and you act like you don't see her. And it's kind of disrespectful. What if this year you work on just kind of honoring your mom a little bit more? For Brian, that bar is too low for him. For Brianna, that's the next step. Does that make sense? So set lots of bars and nudge students. Teenagers resist being pushed. Human beings resist being pushed. But teenagers really respond well to the nudge of an adult who has proven over time that they're interested in them and they're walking the squiggly path with them. You see, when you're interested and you're embracing their squiggle and now you're nudging them, they'll step up for that. They'll reach for that bar. And so this year, I would encourage you, start thinking of the students in your group and going, okay, what's the bar for him? What's the bar for her? What's the bar? And nudge them towards the next spiritual step. This one, I kind of thought we would end on a controversial note. Talk about Jesus more than you talk about God. Now, that sounds theologically like, okay, Kurt, you do understand. Dustin, who did you bring to the talk about what's going on? Here's what I mean by that. I know they're out there. I know they're out there. I just have not met very many atheist teenagers. I really haven't met that many atheist teenagers. Most teenagers, in their way, in their way of thinking about it, are pro-God. I love God. God's okay. God's cool, I guess. I'm sure there's a God. And what happens is when we talk God talk more than Jesus talk, what that does is it just sort of blends their preconceived notions of who God is, and it makes their shortcomings of their understanding of God, it kind of solidifies those things because we're just talking about God. I would encourage you where you can to use Jesus language more than God language. God language is super safe. Jesus language draws a line in the sand, doesn't it? I mean, Jesus language Jesus is the great differentiator. In our ministry, we learned the hard way that our kids did not have enough Jesus talk. They didn't have a good understanding of the gospel. They couldn't articulate the gospel. We would talk to students who came through our student leadership who wanted to be summer interns, who grew up at Saddleback, and now they're in college wanting to be interns. And we'd say, okay, talk to us about the gospel. Share the gospel with me as if I were a teenager. And they more often than not, couldn't do it. And they would say things like, I'd say, okay, I'm a teenager, lead me to Jesus. Okay, well, I want you to just run into God's arms. Okay? I'm running into God's arms. Yep. Yeah, God's hugging you. Yeah, he's hugging me, okay. Anything else? No, that's it. Okay. Or they would give me some talking points, but if I asked us a question, well, you know, why did Jesus have to die for my sins? Oh, wait, why did Jesus have to die for my sins? You mean they might ask me that, Kurt? Yeah. Well, I don't know. And these are students who grew up in our ministry. These are like the cream of our crop. And we realized they loved God, but they didn't know how to talk about Jesus. And one of the things I'm really excited about for you guys is that you've made this decision that most of you probably know about. I don't know if you do or not, but you've made this decision that at camp every year, that the theme of every camp is Jesus. They're all your camps are always Jesus-centric, because we've got to be talking to our kids. Now, you'll talk about Jesus all during the year as well, but you're making this conscientious decision to talk about Jesus at camp as opposed to God or Old Testament heroes or whatever, because we've got to be pointing our kids to Jesus Christ. So talk about God more than Jesus. Whenever you can, use Jesus language instead of God language. And then in closing, if you only develop one of these 10 skills, it would be this, and that is simply refuse to quit. Refuse to quit. Because I've been in youth ministry for 33 years, people always pull me aside and they say, Kurt, how have you lasted? How have you lasted so long? And I usually say, Mountain Dew. You know, like, me and Mountain Dew will get you through all the tough times. I used to try to have these really deep theological answers, deep answers of my calling and a sense of purpose. And that's true, but my answer now, whenever somebody says, Kurt, how have you lasted? My answer is always the same. It's the truth. I just refuse to quit. Like, if you want to do youth ministry for a long time, you can. You can. Just refuse to quit. You see, it's like you're on this road, and on your youth ministry road, there's going to be all kinds of off-ramps that would be totally normal if you took the off-ramp, right? I'm getting married, and I need to spend more time with my new spouse. That off-ramp, nobody would fault you for that. Lots of people get out of youth ministry, they take that off-ramp. Or, you know, I'm changing careers, and I need to really work hard the first year to show my new employer that I'm serious. That's an off-ramp. Nobody would fault you for that. We're having kids. I need to spend time with my off-ramp. Nobody would fault you for that. I'm getting a little bit older. I just don't have as much energy. I've got some other interests. I've been in this thing for a long time. You guys, honestly, right now at my church, if I took the I've been doing it at our church for 25 years, I'm 55 years old, off-ramp, not only would they not blame me, but they would probably like give me this awesome standing ovation. Thank you for the years of service. Thank you. You're amazing. Oh, right? They would probably do, because that would be an off-ramp that nobody would fault me for. If you want to stay in youth ministry for the long haul, you just blow by the off-ramps. You just blow right past the off-ramps. And you just figure out how to embrace the parallel tracks in life of life gets busy, life things change, and you love youth ministry, and you're called to this thing, and you're embracing the squiggle, and you're interested. When you think about this, there aren't that many adults in your church. There aren't that many adults in your church who simultaneously love Jesus and like teenagers. They all love teenagers because they have to, because they're Christians, right? Oh, those crazy teenagers, love them in the name of the Lord, right? Love them in the name of the Lord. Our church loves teenagers so much, we built a 20 million, why? I don't understand how this works. Our church built a $20 million youth facility. $20 million youth facility. 50,000 square foot youth facility. At the farthest end of the campus. Where nobody ever sees them or hears them, and the adults and the teenagers never have to come in contact with each other. We love them so much. But most adults don't like teenagers. They don't like the squiggle. They're not interested in what's going on in the heart, in the experience of a child of God in their church. And if you're one of the rare ones, and I think you are, that's why you're here tonight. If you're one of the rare ones, thank you. Don't quit. I hope you prayed about getting in, and I hope you'll pray about getting out. Don't get out because you have a bad small group experience. Don't get out because there's a frustrated parent. Don't get out because you disagree with the decision that your youth pastor makes. That's all the short-term stuff. But the return on your investment, because you're investing time. And sometimes we go, I don't see the return on this. It's just not working out. The return is 10 years from now when Chad pulls you aside at a wedding and says, man, our small group at CCV was awesome. And every now and then they'll even say, thanks. Thanks for pouring into my life. You may not experience that fruit, that ROI, if you take the first off-ramp that comes your way. So hang in there. What you're doing matters. You're part of a great movement. CCV is an awesome church. And you guys are doing great things in your community. And I'm just so thankful to be friends with Dustin. And, you know, we're all in this thing together, right? I mean, we're in it together. So thanks for being here tonight. I'd like to close in prayer, and then Dustin's got a few things. God, thanks so much for these men and women and their commitment to you first and foremost. And Father, thanks for their commitment to what you're doing here in student ministries at CCV. God, would you infuse them with the power and the strength and the grace and the wisdom of your Holy Spirit. Father, as they head into camp season and everything that entails, we pray that this would be the most fruitful summer in the history of their youth ministry. Father, that students would come to know you in brand new and deeper, more meaningful ways. In your name we pray. Amen. Thanks, you guys.
Well, I hope you enjoyed Kurt's talk as much as I have, and really so many of us have over the course of the summer. I think it's such an important message. Here's three quick takeaways from my vantage point. One of the things I love that Kurt says is embrace the squiggle. The trajectory of the lives of our students is not an up and to the right straight line. It is a constant squiggle, and that's really all of our stories. So we got to remember that, and that's a great mindset. I love how Kurt said, be interested, not interesting. Be interested, not interesting. And he said this, we've bought into the lie that to be a great coach, we have to be the show. And that is such a lie. Man, you don't need to be interesting. You just need to show tons of interest into the lives of your students. I think that was killer. And then he quoted another youth ministry guru. His name was Wayne Rice. He said, teenagers will be drawn to the oldest person in the room who takes them seriously. So legit. What a great quote there. And then last but not least, I wrote down, ask questions and remember the answers so that you can follow up later. That's all about being interested in the lives of students. Those are my takeaways. I hope you've got some of your own, and I just would challenge you, whatever takeaways that you've got, this would be a great opportunity to share some of those takeaways with your co-leader and talk about how you together can continue to partner together in leading your small group. Again, thanks for taking the time. Thanks for investing in your personal leadership. It makes all the difference as we try to raise up Christ-centered difference makers. We'll see you next month.